Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants' lines will be open for the duration of today's conference. If you are not speaking in conference, if you please utilize your mute button when not speaking. If you do not have a mute button, you can press star 6 to mute and star 6 to unmute. I would also like to remind all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the conference over to Mr. Jay Morrissey. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Queenie. Hello, everyone. My name is Jay Morrissey. I work for IBM Rational Clear Case. Welcome to the open mic, or the second Rational Support open mic. The topic today is going to be UCM Stream Strategy, technically hosted by Mr. Rick Robards and Mr. William Frontiero. I'll turn the conference over to them in just a moment to get the ball rolling. Before we do that, I'd like to get a quick idea of who we have out there for customers. I'd like to, if I could, get your names, just so we know who's there, and that we understand who's in attendance. So if you could just shout out or call out who you are from my log, I would appreciate it. Any customers out there?
This is Janine Kazerski from Alcatel-Lucent.
Hi, Janine. Welcome.
John Langling with Radisys Corporation.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Hello.
Anybody else?
Oh.
Okay. Very good, then. Janine, John, and whoever else is out there maybe lurking in the customer space, welcome to the party. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here with Will.
Hi, Rick and Will. Welcome. I'm going to turn the meeting over to you right now to get you started. You've got the notes I sent you from the developer forum, the questions that were asked out there by Matt and Jim and Tamir. If you could work that into your discussion, that would be great. And the reins are yours. Carry on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for inviting me to do this. I'm happy to talk UCM at any time. It's one of my favorite subjects. And Jay had asked me to come up with a topic that I thought was pertinent, and I think that the topic that most people have the most amount of problems with are determining their stream strategies and how their environment should actually look and what type of workflow would be the most beneficial. And so to start it off, I just wanted to start off with defining the different types of architecture. There's really only three major types that we really discuss in broad scope. And the first one is release-based architecture, and it's depicted by streams and projects being defined for specific releases of the entire product. And they have the attributes that, for the most part, all of the source code is being modified by all the developers in single projects that are specifically slated for a specific release date. So that would be release-based architecture. The second is called component-based architecture, and this is where projects and streams are married to their component specifically, and they are not necessarily targeted for any one specific release. They're targeted for keeping the component moving forward with new features, but wherever you are at any given time, that's what may get into the build. And then each of these projects can be combined later into a larger integration project that doesn't do any modification at all. Those two major types are kind of similar to the third one, which is what we call the ITIS stream architecture, and it's really kind of a combination of the two, with the added advantage that the software that you're developing is for your own company in-house deployed. You're not releasing software out to third-party customers yourself. You're building it for your own company. And this has the advantage in that usually there's only one release that's ever in production at one time, and there's less of a need to actually do some backpatching. So those are the three major types of architecture. I wanted to make sure that we had a clear definition of it before we went into some details and some questions. There's a couple of other types of streams that I wouldn't really call architecture. There's feature-oriented streams in which a stream is being dedicated to a specific feature or maybe a subset of features, and it needed to be isolated either due to risk or for parallel development. And then there's the last form, a stabilization stream, whose sole purpose is to take a baseline and to validate the quality of that baseline. And you want it on a separate stream because you don't want to lock down the integration stream from receiving deliveries while you're doing your QA and your verification testing. So those aren't really architectures, but those are other reasons for making streams. And then in general, a stream can be made at any time that you feel the need for isolation because of risk or simply because you need to be working in parallel with that another team, you don't want to step on their work. Are there any questions on that definition?
This is Cheryl Baring-Ringhorn. I'm curious as to whether what your opinion is in the isolation versus working in true team format when it comes to stepping on each other's work, not necessarily each other's other teams.
So, in general, there's only two major reasons for ever creating a stream for any reason. The major two reasons are, there probably are others, but the major reasons are, number one, risk mitigation. The type of work that you're going to be doing is experimental, or at least it's risky enough that you don't want it to be directly affecting the larger audience of your larger team. So you're gonna make a stream or a project that's based off of that, but you're working in isolation until you can fully work out the kinks before you actually integrate that into the larger picture. The second reason for creating a stream would be because you definitely need to have parallel development work going on file tests, you know, so that both me and Will could check out the same file concurrently. And we know that the price that we have to pay is to merge later, but we're not stopped from working on our day-to-day tasks. So I don't have an opinion which one's better or not. You have to make the decision. If you don't have a real good decision for making a stream, then you shouldn't do it. You should work together on the same stream so that you avoid the pain of merging later on.
So in other words, just so that I can summarize it from my own perspective, if the risk mitigation were to say we're doing a potential release, ours are all in-house. Ours is the third architecture.
Okay.
So if I'm doing, let's say I have a production application, and I'm taking that, and I'm trying to be proactive as a good IT team player, I would create a stream for that. And then if I'm also making small changes here and there based on user requests, in the production, I would have a stream for that because you don't want to step the two things together. And I'm doing the next project release, which are requirements that are given from a business perspective. Those would be the reasons to have it in parallel that make perfect sense rather than just because we have other developers that the communication may be more of a challenge.
So what you described is probably the largest base of customers are using that type of modeling. And
that's not how we're doing it. That's what concerns me. That's not how we're doing it.
How are you doing it?
Wrong, apparently. actually, I've worked with Will before, so he probably will recognize my company name.
Oh, yeah. I recognize the structure.
A little crazy, but I'm trying to, once I complete the 7.1 upgrade, I'm trying to start making recommendations and making changes incrementally to do it appropriately. That's why I got in on this. I'm like, and by the way, thank you guys for providing this, like, open mic thing. I like that.
You're welcome.
It makes it easier to hear what other people are actually doing, not what the theory is.
Well, exactly, and that's one of the reasons why we have the Rational User Conference as well. so that you can meet up with other people.
Yeah, unfortunately, that won't be on my agenda list. I wish, now that I know what to do with it. I went in 06, I think. I didn't know what to do with the information.
Okay, so...
Okay, so the way that I'm doing it is completely opposite of this.
So you're generating streams on the fly just by developer base or by...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other than
developer. Developer. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah, no,
each project is by developer, and then there is a segregated one that is left for another team to do their builds off of once that's completed correctly. Make sense? Well,
absolutely.
Maybe
yeah.
Not make sense, but
no, absolutely. I can see where you go with that, and we can see how that can happen. It happens a lot, you know. Very very commonly is that the parallel development is per developer. A lot of times that's what we see happen. And I think that's another benefit to your environment actually is that you have the ability to scale down if needed. Me and Rick were actually discussing this. If you're in that ITIS or if you're in that structure, that third category there, you're really not releasing it to third party. So you're going to have the ability if you want to restructure without actually affecting the historical artifacts. You'll have the ability to branch off and I risk it saying the idea of branch off, but ultimately, you know, import into or start another repository for that matter without losing the idea that you're risking your history. You know, you know that your history can remain where it is and you can branch off and continue on in a separate path and take those risks without needing that all extra, you know, in-depth researching and those, you know, major indexing, you know, artifacts.
Right. That's from the UCM perspective, it sounds to me like it's time to revisit and maybe make more pushback on whoever's running the project.
Sure.
Because it's part of what I personally find unsatisfactory is that it causes all kinds of failures during the add to source control and things like that when you have too many people, too many hands in the pot.
Right, right.
Separately.
More branches, more risk of merge, right? More risk of if you have any type of, if a lot of developers are adding source on their own, you have that risk of evil twin. There's multiple risks that can be minimized by creating these streams for a specific purpose rather than for a specific person, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I have the understanding correctly, and that gives me my own thought process going now. Thank you.
If it's any consolation also, when we ship UCM with a ClearCase LT, and it does it right out of the box, the installation right out of the box automatically is going to be creating a stream for every developer, you know, on the joint project.
Yeah, that's a joint project.
So when you're looking in a small scale operation and not a large enterprise deploy, it is a good model just to say, give every one person a stream, and then they know that they're working on their own. I thought when you get to the large scale stuff, which is more along the lines of what we wanted to discuss here today, you need to start thinking in terms of your actual components, the stream relationships that they have, and how can I actually implement this while reducing a lot of extra metadata that may not be necessary because I didn't have to branch as much.
Right. That's what I can't speak for other people online, that I run into that because in order to make it clean and the way it's currently set up, there are more components than I believe that we really should have. And I don't know if you're going to address this in this session, but maybe that could be another session is about compound componentizing. Components, you know, basically trying to make cookie cutter outputs as a baseline to start with. I don't know if you're going to address that in this.
Well, yeah, we will because one of the reasons why I wanted this particular discussion topic is I believe that too many customers are deeply embedded in release-based architecture, and especially if they've been using UCM, when they get to be about 4 to 5 years old, they're embedded. And they have all these streams and all this merging going on, and they're in desperate need of actually making the components, you know, starting to take a look at breaking up projects to work only on specific subsets of the source code and splitting those components off
Yes, that'd be me in a nutshell.
It's a lot of customers.
So
I feel better.
So the problem that you have is that the reason why people don't opt for component-based architecture in the beginning, it's the most difficult architecture to set up. You have to know what your components are, what can be built and tested individually, and are there specific teams that are experts on those particular components. And in the beginning, you don't always have a clear picture of that. You usually discover that 3-4 years later, but now you're embedded in the release-based architecture.
And for me, I think I could actually do two types of creations of projects, most of which would be component-based rather than release-based, but there are a few of these that need to be release-based.
Well, in the real world, I've never seen a customer that didn't have a mix of both to some level or another. So when we talk about these things, and then when you ask what's the best, you'll get as many opinions as you ask people when you start to talk about large architectural deploys. But as I stated, one of my goals is that I really believe a lot of customers would benefit from the way I like to say it is to divide and conquer, pull out subsets of the component base, of your development artifacts, and actually work them into a new component and start over, and then only have specific projects that work on those components, even if you have tons of other projects that are reading those baselines.
Right, exactly. I totally agree, because from the administration standpoint, I agree that the time frame is like four to five year time frame.
That's what
I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only because I've been dealing with this long enough to go, aha. Pause, let's look again.
So there's also, and it was interesting to see that a gentleman named Tamir Geffen had posted on this particular dev site stating he had made the statement that he wrote a paper on why this approach is better than using the substream approach. And I'm not sure where that document is, but I think I do recall seeing that several years ago. Tamir, are you on the line? Okay, I guess not.
Yeah, he actually does. I'm actually online with it because I wanted to see the subject matter we were talking about too. It's actually a URL.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sure that that's going to be describing what we're talking about here with component-based architecture. So there's a couple of other things that I wanted to say as well, and some of the pitfalls, especially when you're in a release-based architecture, is the temptation to want to do an alternate target deliver, where you're going to be delivering from one stream either to another release stream or across a project. It doesn't really matter, but any time that I see an architecture that has implemented a consistent or even automated structure of doing alternate target delivers, I get a little bit nervous, because I think that if we can take a look at if there are ways to actually rebase those particular file sets in rather than the alternate target deliver, you can greatly reduce the amount of metadata that's being generated. And the way I can describe this is the fact that if I'm delivering a baseline from project 1 to project 2, every single file that's included in that baseline is going to get a new version in the target project. Whereas if I rebase it, only the files that I've actually modified on the target are going to get merges. It's even worse in the fact that once a version has been created on the target of an alternate target deliver, now a new version will get created even on subsequent rebases. So once that gets started, then your metadata is going to be growing at a multiplicative rate when it really wasn't necessary. So one of my opinions on especially when you're on release-based architecture, is to avoid that temptation to do alternate target delivers ever. It's there for an emergency if you need it, but you should always wait for a stable baseline and rebase.
Can I jump in for a quick question?
Sure.
So what you're saying there is your second project seeded from the first project, or were they both seeded from the same root of the VOP?
Well, that's once again, that becomes a a question on how much history you already have. It, some people have gotten so deeply nested that they have what's called the mainline project, where all the projects have to deliver to the mainline, where it's a focal integration point for all projects, and no project is allowed to be generated from anything but the mainline project. The purpose of that particular stream hierarchy is to reduce the deeply nested branching structures that get generated when you're seeding directly off of another project.
Right, and so what we've done there is we create a master project, and then from there we seed to a 1.0, and then deliver 1.0 back to master, create a baseline, and then seed to 2.0. So in your example here, should we really be not delivering 1.0 to master, which I'm going to call a push? We should go to master and rebase, which is more of a pull.
Now, in that scenario, you do want to push. And that's one of the very few scenarios where that deliver to, in this case, it wouldn't necessarily be considered. We don't want to call that an alternate target, because technically
if it's a separate project,
you're going to get that terminology. But in reality, it was the baseline that seeded that child project. So in a baseline ancestry, it is technically a parent-child relationship. So
delivers should always go to the parent. Otherwise, this should be a rebase.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want that.
That's a good way to lay it out.
Yeah. No matter if it's a cross project or whatever. If you have a central integration point, you want to merge your changes into that.
Right. Because you know the versions already exist there in most cases, or that branch already contains those files in some nature. So you're really not generating useless metadata there. You know that branch should contain those file elements or those
and files. Those merge results.
Exactly.
So
does that then eliminate the problem with the not visible files?
Yes. In the matter, would you mean in
a lot of reasons?
Yeah, the invisible files can come up if in any case where developers are changing the code architecture or adding moving things, but. If in sense what you're saying is the path limitation where it can't resolve, that would eliminate that absolutely in those type of scenarios.
Not so much there, but if somebody restructured and they added a folder, deleted a folder, added a folder, when I deliver, I get hit with the not visible issue, but you're saying if I rebase, I wouldn't have that issue.
The rebase is going to trump that, because the rebase has a selected version. Where the deliver is going to take a source and a target version and force a merge. The rebase says this is the version we have labeled. Unless you say otherwise, this is the version we're going to look at.
So that error message will only be shown during a merge on that particular deliver. If the problem occurred in the what you just described, a rebase won't throw an error, but it may not let you know that file really isn't visible.
Right, because you're relying on the baseline there to say, yes, this is the baseline we know is current and the one we want as our latest foundation. So,
and can I ask, is this Jim Ring?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I figured it was based upon your question there. I just wanted to confirm.
That's good. Okay. but in the case of somebody added a folder, deleted a folder, added a folder, deleted a folder, come later, if I rebase and they can't find it, I don't care because it's really not there.
Right, they deleted it. It was an intentional deletion, which means that code should not be visible.
Right, okay.
Right, so an invisible is not always a bad, and that's why we have it as a warning. That's why the deliver will allow you to complete if the files could not be found on the target. And it's because UCM knows that could have intentionally been removed from the latest source.
And I found in 7101, I'm still not able to deliver, not able to complete the deliver, even if the policy is turned on. Is that a bug, or is there still something that I don't have set correctly?
Which policy is it that you're flipping?
The one that says, and I'm not sure of the wording, some of those policies are negatively worded.
Is it
enabled to not check it or not allow it? But it's the policy referring to files
allow
being visible
with
checkouts. You were breaking up there. I'm sorry.
Oh, so is it the policy referring to deliver foundation changes in addition to the stream, or is it?
It's below that, and I'm not near a machine right now, but it's one of the intra-project deliver. If it's okay if files are visible or do you require them? I'm not sure what the wording is.
I have it up. Require that all source components are visible in the target stream?
Oh, that,
yeah.
That would be a separate scenario. That would not actually be even considered merge result. So if you have a list of foundation baselines in your streams, as in you've configured your stream to look at three components, if that mainline project does not contain all three of those components and you're delivering up, that policy will still, true to 7.1, must be the flip to satisfy that. You either must have all the components listed or you must have, you know, that policy enabled to loosen it up, to allow it to merge even though it knows that component's not going to be considered at all. So that will stay the same. That architecture is still common.
Okay.
So while we have you, Jim, we'll go ahead and address a couple of the other questions that you had written in.
Oh, that'd be great.
You were asking about the number of PVODs.
Yes.
And we really hesitate here on the support side to put numbers down on anything for performance reasons.
Sure.
But we can certainly, you know, make some blanket statements. And we agree with your final statement that in your particular scenario, one VOD definitely would not cut the mustard.
That's just a bad idea, right?
Well, 650 components is a lot for any one particular PVOD. And not to mention, it's hard to imagine that all 650 components are going to have concurrent history that really map to each other. You would think that they each have a different development line, that they're simply getting aggregated at build time.
And those 650, basically what we've done, and this design was here before I got here, but each application has its own VOD. So it's a single component VOD. We're not creating baselines across multiple components, so they're really all individual.
So that's almost a pure producer-consumer relationship.
Yeah.
Do any of your projects actually read from the other projects?
Very few of them.
So
for the
almost,
most part,
you have 650 different companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say individual PVODs for all, but you definitely can cut it up pretty good. And certainly, if they're not sharing data across projects, you have a pretty open idea of what you can do. I mean, you have a lot of options. You really do. You have a lot of options. I would be more concerned with the actual the server processes and whatnot than I would be with the UCM metadata at that point.
That is one of our issues, and we do monitor that. We run about 300 VODs per Windows box, just because of the service count.
Yeah,
and I'm guessing.
And I am looking at moving to Z-Linux as well.
Okay, and we I think we're just, you know, we've just released that, I believe, in the Z-Series and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that's certainly something I would be more, you know, just make sure that the systems are breathing and healthy, because obviously if that's a concern, then that's the highest level we can go. But you know, from a UCM standpoint, we do have a few more articles out there. A couple more publishments just went out in regards to nested PVOD structures, actually. We do have a newer white paper on it, and there is an, I don't know if you're familiar with the IEA modules, the IBM Educational Assistant, but that is actually a fairly new web utility that allows you to go over some of these specific areas, and one of them is actually admin VOD structures. So that's something you can certainly refer to, because it will help you in deciding, okay, what is my larger sum of metadata? Is it my global branch types, right? Do you have a lot of branching structures? You know, is one component VOD extremely large compared to another? You know, just look at the sheer sizes, and it will help you understand where what metadata is located in the admin VOD, what data is located in the component VOD, and how you can go about making sure that that's load balanced the best way.
Now, one question that I didn't have in there, but also went back to the different types of streams when you started the call. When people leave the company, we always go back and remove all their views, but I've never really gone back and removed the streams.
You should not.
I should not. In fact, you can't on the integration part, but on the development part, I cannot or I should not.
Cannot.
Yeah. Okay.
Been there, done that, Jim.
You basically just want to obsolete their stream so they're hidden, so that you kind of clean up the project. And the other thing I always find is people create new streams just to get read-only access to the project to look at data. There's no changes on those streams, and those you can delete. As long as there's no changes on the stream, you can just safely delete them once the views are gone.
So as long as they never delivered anything, I could go back and smoke all those old streams.
As long as there's no changes.
As long as there was no activity at all on it, except for creating a view, and you've removed the view from it. Yes. Then they're done that.
Once you've made a single check-in, that stream is now critical to the historical integrity.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the system would stop me from doing that, right?
That's right.
Yes.
So when we say you cannot do it, if you call us and we had to break into your PBOB, we could do it for you, but we don't like to do it.
Yeah.
One of the benefits that I've and everybody hates my guts for repeating this, but my favorite purpose for using UCM is the mutable baseline. And what that means is that if you're using UCM and you generate a baseline, you can be guaranteed that baseline is going to last 10 years from now. You can come back and rebuild exactly with the exact same versions that were existent from when that baseline was generated. That gets thrown out the window once you start talking about removing versions, breaking streams apart, and all those other things. I think you lose one of the great values of using UCM.
This also goes back to creating streams according to developer or according to purpose, right? So if each developer has their own stream in this scenario, then, you know that stream was pretty much worthless at this point. However, if they were sharing a stream and you're simply just using, like, a trigger or whatnot to protect the metadata according to that stream's purpose, then now you've isolated and said, okay, the work that user did was important. They may have left the company, but that stream's still important because that stream has a purpose rather than a person.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
Hi, my name is Srinivas Saraji.
Hello?
We heard you, but I didn't quite catch your name.
No, okay, my name is Srinivas Saraji.
Srinivas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you suggest me, I have almost 100 PWAP, and my users want to use each component from, I have 2 PWAP, 1 PWAP, right now we are using read-only component from different PWAP in a given PWAP in a project. Can I make a base clear case version? You can make I can share a component in a admin WAP. I can attach a admin WAP as a PWAP from the other PWAP component.
Okay, so I think I got the gist of the question. Let me make a general information statement on that, and
mm-hmm.
then we'll see if that's what you're going at.
Mm-hmm.
When the PWABs are created
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, they don't share a common admin WAB at that particular time, so the potential exists
mm-hmm.
that they have each created branch types or any other metadata with the same name that would have eclipsed each other, and that's why you can't use a component from one PWAB as modifiable in another PWAB.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way to link the two PWABs together under a common admin WAB. You can create an admin WAB after the fact and then use the ln_PWAB routine, which is documented in a white paper.
Yeah, I saw that nested PWAB. How far is it best practice or not?
Yeah, it will go over which scenarios require the use of the UCM util tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes over this. There's also another, there's another white paper on the information that actually the metadata, where it exists in the project blob, what's going to get migrated when you do associate them to a common admin blob.
Mm-hmm.
That will help you build your environment, and it will help you determine which is the best nested structure.
Mm-hmm.
It'll help you decide, if you have 100 project blobs,
mm-hmm.
That maybe only 5 of them will share modification of components, which means only 5 of them might need to be associated with a common tree. That doesn't necessarily mean that later on, if you determine that you need another 6 up there, you could then associate those other 6 if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is you do it on a per-component basis. And once again, back to the component strategy is, is if you're planning per component, you know, it helps you determine which component will be produced in which project, which PVOD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're actually going to produce baselines or produce data on that component, modification.
Which also implies, if we did it correctly, there isn't a need to for me to modify a component from another PVOD. I can always read it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if I had done it correctly, okay, set up my component-based architecture correctly,
mm-hmm.
then I wouldn't have the need to do so. So, I mean, I might need to read that component, but if I wanted to modify it, I would have to jump over to their project to do the modification.
Right. Reading a component and sharing a component across PVODs as read-only, it can be done without any admin VOD structure.
Mm-hmm.
The admin VOD structure is only needed when you determine that you need to modify it, when you need to produce it on that component. And the reason for that is you're going to require branch creation for elements within that component VOD. And that is required. You need an admin VOD structure for that. You need access to global branch types in that matter. So producing a component, modifying a component across project VODs, you're going to want to refer to the LNP VOD, as Rick suggested. Use the UCM UTIL tool and determine if it's the best course of action for you. There are do's and don'ts to it. There are certainly... It outlines when you need the UCM UTIL tool, when you do not.
Mm-hmm.
There are multi-site considerations, because once you link PVODs, you
mm-hmm.
have to consider the repercussions of in a multi-sited environment. Are those VODs now able to be replicated to sensitive sites? Can those VODs be read by sensitive sites or even visible?
Mm-hmm.
So there are things you want to weigh into, you know, take into account before making those decisions. Because the UCM UTIL tool is one of those tools that when it makes a commitment, you know, you make that admin VOD commitment, you do stick to it. You are saying that the production of these VODs moving forward should be nested. They should share producing components.
Okay, thank you.
Where I work, we were looking at doing something like that with the linking the PVOPs together, and we kind of backed off of that and just go with the straight component architecture and a producer-consumer model with a project which is read-writable, access to the component, and then the various other projects that consume baselines off of that project, and it's worked out really well, I think.
Yeah, and it generates nearly nothing for metadata.
Yeah.
And absolutely no branching structures.
All the metadata is actually very, very specific and valuable.
Yes.
So we're happy to hear that for you.
Absolutely.
We would have done something like that in the old base clear case days, but not with UCM, I don't think.
I would think twice before I would. I mean, once again, if I have multiple PVOPs that are already up and operational, and now I want to modify a component in another one of the PVOPs, I would think twice about if I was sure I wanted to do that. I would think that I would train the developers to be a member of both projects. If I had a single developer, so because there's just all that extra metadata and merging that we talk about, and we're now moving towards a complete release-based architecture where everything's being combined together in single streams, and we're trying to make a statement that we want to avoid those. Are there any other questions?
This is Cheryl again. Can we go back to, you said something about there's an IBM education system. Is it something that's online that we can do per, like, segment or section or something? Rather than all one on-site class or something like that?
Yeah, they're actually broken down into topic, and they're in PowerPoint format, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yep, and they have notes along with them, so they have the instructor notes with them and whatnot. So I'm pretty certain that the instructor notes are also bundled with the PowerPoints. I can certainly confirm that, but and I can follow up with Jay and see if we can push
we'll
out.
We'll post the on this particular DevWork forum.
Are they openly available or?
I believe so. We still run that fine line as being internal, according to what we have access to and do not. But I can
free to you guys is not free to us.
Well, see, this is the question.
Yep. We'll certainly follow up on the DevWorks article if you have access to that, which I believe you do, and we can post, you know, what link specifically and if needed access, how to get it.
That would be phenomenal, because then it's at my pace, my time, whether I'm eating lunch or not.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
And that's what they're geared towards. They're absolutely geared towards the client base and, you know, moving at your pace and when you have availability.
Okay.
This is Denise. You can also go out to the IBM website and just search for IBM Education Assistant.
Assistant.
Assistant. Okay. And you'll see a list of the modules out there.
You?
Hi, this is Matt Buriola. I joined probably a few minutes into the conversation, and I'm the one that posted earlier about having kind of a small shop with several single component projects. And each of our projects are J2EE applications, and they're all very specific, and so there's really no sharing between those at this point. I think one of my main questions was, how long do you think we can last being a CCLT shop before we have to consider going to full?
If you're going to continue to work along that line, the issue that you have is that you only get one PBOP.
That's right. And so far, I don't see any reason why. I mean, I guess we're not growing enough to really warrant breaking that up at this point. I think we're doing pretty good. We have like 22 apps.
Yeah, what's the rate of growth? Is it changing, and do you anticipate it changing? I mean, the last thing you'd want to do is to all of a sudden realize that, you know, we're creating four projects a day, and now a year down the road we have 10,000 projects in one PBOP.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely not growing that quickly. Our applications are internal use. We're a credit union, so everything's pretty much just what we have for our public and internal use. And we'll probably get maybe one application every 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's something new that we have to start managing and deploying. Most of our work is really maintenance and enhancements to existing apps.
Well, I think that the criteria for moving off of LT is, number one, is I'm not sure when it's end of life. We have to go take a look at that.
This is Denise. It's actually in 7.1.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, we've announced that.
Okay, good.
Say that again, please. What was that?
CCLT is end of life in ClearCase version 7.1.
Really? Okay.
So the disadvantage is that there's no support there. We'll continue to help you with it, but we can't go to development and get bug fixes.
Okay.
As of 7.1.
As of 7.1.
Yeah.
Okay.
At this point, we can still work on existing.
But as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure of this, there's no functional loss by using LT other than you only get PBOP and there's no multi-site.
Right, and we can't do, I think, the managed builds or something like that. There was some other piece that...
snapshot views only, so there's no
right.
dynamic views, so you don't get to use ClearMate.
Right.
Yeah.
And we haven't really had an issue with that, I guess. I mean, it's working okay for us. We only have four developers on the team, and builds are done on one central server, so it's still pretty easy to maintain at this point. But the 7.1 looks like that might be a real good reason to consider. What is the time horizon on that?
What's the what?
What is the timeline for ClearCase 7.1?
That is out.
Released.
That has been released. We actually just released...
it was released in November, I think.
7.1.01. I think we just released a fix for it as well. So there is most, you know, very recent updates on it. So it's already been kicked around. It's already been out there for, maybe even close to definitely 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been out since the end of November.
Okay.
So
when you say end of life for CCLT, meaning if we upgrade to 7.1, then we have to go to full. But if we stay where we are, then how much time do we have before support is gone?
Depends on what you call support. We'll
okay.
still help you with it.
Right.
If you call into tech support,
mm-hmm.
we'll walk you through and help you set it up and do what we can, but we can't submit defects.
I see. Okay.
And there are the migration path is pretty standard for moving from the LT version to full. Your VOBs are still valuable and whatnot, so you don't have to worry about that.
Right, right.
And be starting over.
Okay.
So I think you were... we didn't get your name even on the posting.
Matt, right?
Right, my name is Matt. Uh-huh.
Matt, so it was the first posting?
Right, I posted under the ID M. Buriola.
Kind of showed up on the bottom. Right there. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Just want to make sure we're looking at the right notes here.
Right.
Are you
right.
the guy that mentioned ClearCase Kung Fu?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a lot of the folks on here are much, much bigger shops, and so that was kind of my concern, too, is we're a fairly small group, and, you know, things are pretty stable around here, so.
That's not a bad thing.
How does one get, you know, exposure to, you know, some of the different scenarios or some of the things that can happen?
Well, Matt, I'd be happy to call you when my stuff breaks if you'd like. Mine breaks a lot.
Does it?
Developer Works is a great, there's a lot of knowledge sharing, and you can see a lot of the things that people encounter and how they overcome it. There are a lot
CM
of...
CM Crossroads?
Yeah, CM Crossroads is also another great resource. You know, I'm sure there's... ClearCase has been in the marketplace for quite some time, so I mean, there's a lot of knowledge sharing out there for it, and a lot of white papers, and a lot of very personal papers. I mean, there's a lot of independent papers on it, not necessarily from IBM or its employees. I mean, people share a lot of knowledge in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, CM Crossroads and DeveloperWorks are great spots for it.
Yeah, I get the most help offline from DeveloperWorks, this forum here. I get the most help, most quick help that's
okay.
meaningful. So, just an FYI.
Right.
As I have, there's just me, and we have, you know, anywhere from 55 to 75 developers at one time.
Wow.
And we're global, and it's just me, myself, and I. And I don't know if your background is in server technology or whatever, but that's what causes a lot of things over here on my side,
wow.
server stuff. And if you're not a very big shop, then you've got your hands quickly to everything. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I would do personally, I would just subscribe to the ClearCase and Developer Workshop, Developer Work Forum, and then there's another one that I subscribe to. And then when you see something that you can answer, just answer it back, and then people will send you questions.
Okay. Sounds good. What was your name again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it earlier.
Mine? Cheryl.
Okay. Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. I'm under C. Evans.
Okay. Cool.
And I'd be happy to take this offline with you and, you know, shoot you some of the stuff that I've seen come through here that I go, oh, yeah, and it does help, by the way.
Okay.
You guys are right. It helps being on these things because then when that comes across your desk, you go, oh, I know how to solve this, or I know where to look.
Right, right.
Or I remember a name. And all you have to do is, you know, get that thread, FYI.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks.
You're welcome.
We depend upon it here, even on our side of the block, quite heavily to listen to all of the customers. Even though we do a lot of QA testing, when we start to talk about software configuration management and all the different methodologies and ways that you can actually set up UCM in particular, not every permutation can get tested by us. So
right. So
we'll actually end up learning stuff from the customer. So we try to keep a good eye even on the external sites, such as CM Crossroads as well.
Okay.
Hi, Srinivas again. I have one question regarding a team concerns or whatever, Jazz, right?
Jazz, yep.
Yeah, Jazz. Like, we have like a ClearCase as well as SVN. Any, like, in a future roadmap, is it any integration between ClearCase and SVN, sharing the, like, code between two version control systems?
The answer is yes, but we're not going to dive too deep into that on this con call.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do is we can direct you to the product management group,
mm-hmm.
and they can actually give you the official roadmap.
Okay.
But yes, we are aware that there is integration that will be between ClearCase UCM and Jazz.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
This is Bruce Biles. I joined the call a little late.
Sure. Hi, Bruce.
I wanted to follow up on that discussion earlier about components in UCM.
Okay. Bruce?
Yeah?
Okay. We had to turn up your volume a little bit. You were a little bit soft.
Let me move my mic here. One of the problems that I have with moving teams into better component structures as they come up the learning curve with UCM is how difficult UCM makes that. Everything else in UCM is pretty flexible, but recomponentizing your product is very difficult.
We know. Yeah.
Go ahead. Without you know, erasing the board and starting all over again.
Yeah, and it's to its core foundation, and we have to say that, you know, ultimately is it was based on the idea of historical preservation, and that fights us in that matter, and that's where we run into that battle, is, you know, those projects, those structures were based on the component structure that it was originated with, that was foundationed with, and we do know that is a, you know, it is something that could afford some tweaking and whatnot, but ultimately, it's where we want to go into, you know, this project structure, or this release structure, or this component structure was based for this reason. You know, it had that purpose. And if we need to adjust, we do want to push for, okay, maybe we should consider how this should be refoundationed or what new direction this is looking to go in. And I understand that for some shops, that can be, you know, pretty cumbersome. And there are some options. I mean, certainly I can't say that we haven't exercised them all or we haven't discussed them all with you. So if you want to kind of elaborate on maybe one of your most recent challenges, maybe we can discuss that. Or,
well, the challenge I face repeatedly is that a team gets to the point where they are willing to refactor their code base and segregate out some of the common components, but they're really hesitant to lose all the history. So I'd be willing to see duplicate in a metadata as far as, not like where, yes, I have to keep the old component around. I can't nuke it. I don't scrub it out of the VOB or the PVOB, but I lock it down and it's, you know, it's no longer used, and the elements have moved into new components, and I've still got my version 3. You know,
what stops you from doing that with the clear export sheet case?
Yeah, that is possible. I mean, this is an option that actually, the way you describe it, is the option that we have.
That is our option. If most people aren't satisfied with
right.
it, but certainly if you clear export sheet case the entire file set that you want to make a new component of into a new VOB,
You can componentize
that new VOB and use it with the old PVOB.
Right, and keep its history.
And keep its history, but the versions that are associated with that history in the new VOB do not have any UCM association.
Right, their activity association stripped off, and their branching structure is there. However, it's not necessarily stream architecture.
The branches remain, but
right.
The streams are gone.
Exactly.
The versions are there, but baseline information would be gone.
Well,
labels are still there.
Just the activity association.
But the non-incremental baselines are
right.
No longer valid. But any of your full baselines that you had created, those labels moved across during the clear export C case. All the branches moved across, and every single version moved across. So it's just a complicated flat clear case VOB at that point.
And I don't know if Jay's going to give me flack for this or not, but I would say, actually, what you're describing, if that is something you encounter often and would like to work that out with our team, depending on the support contract, I would recommend opening up a case with that, because that is something we can describe in-house and set you up with a procedure to do so.
Good call, Will.
That's okay, Jay.
Well,
I don't want to go to
It is now.
Now, could I do that and bring that new component into the same multi-component VOB where the old component was?
No,
it
has to be a new VOB.
The reason it would have to be a new VOB is because the branching structure that exists in that current VOB is already associated with much of UCM metadata and already contains an admin VOB association to the PVOB.
All right, what if I wanted to take that? Let's say I've taken an old component and I've used that export and re-import method to put it into two new component VOBs. Can I then activate those new components in existing projects, or am I going to get metadata conflicts if I try to link those as components to that the PVOB that had the old component?
I would say you can use them in an existing project VOB. I would be hesitant to push them into an existing project.
No, I have no hesitation at all. It's
okay.
Fine. You can do that, The only problem that you're going to have is the confusion the developer might have when they start to look at parallel directories and file structures. But as far as UCM and ClearCase is concerned, these are completely different files.
They are separate files, separate elements. They'll just have a common branch.
So it doesn't matter. Okay, those branches are fine. The truth is that I'm going to see foo.c in dir 1 twice.
Right.
Once under each of the different...
And that's my concern with adding them into the existing project structure.
So UCM won't block
right.
on it.
It's not going to stop it.
But the developers need to be aware that they need to stop working in the old component.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I would delete the RM name. The
absolutely.
Old,
yep. If you RM name,
new
baseline, everybody rebases, you're good to go.
If we're ClearQuest enabled, you're saying that link to the ClearQuest defects and base TMAs is lost as part of this process.
It exists on the old on the old component. The new component, Bob, that you bring in has absolutely no defect tracking yet. All new activities will need to be associated with all new versions created. It'll be as if it was a base VOD coming in ultimately with base.
But if you're willing to lose the change set, that would be okay.
You can never lose the change set. That's
Well, losing the link to the change set, I should say.
It stays with the old VOD data.
Right.
Clear export does not take the history away from the original. It just puts it in a new one. Right.
So I'm looking at the new VOD. The new VOD wouldn't have any change set info tying it back to CQ.
Correct.
But all of your versions are in ClearCase.
Correct.
That's correct. Correct.
So if you're willing to break that, then that would still be a good idea.
Yes.
And you're also limited, even though the labels came across, those labels need to be imported as new baselines into the old TVOP. And you can only add one baseline to your existing project. So you have to make a choice on which of the baselines you're going to start with in the new project. Usually the last known good one.
It's always a good idea.
So we're getting close on time here. I think we have a few more questions. Did that answer the question?
Yeah. It's ugly.
This is Jim. I've got one last question I think was in my email. If I wanted to rename a VOB, and there's a lot of activity out there, if I RM tagged it, unregistered it, renamed the storage, re-registered it, re-tagged it, does CQ have the UUID info, or does it have the VOB name for those links in the chain set?
It has the VOB UUID, and so there, anything in UCM or even CQ-enabled UCM, you can tag and rename a VOB to your heart's content because we're going to use a ClearCase registry. That's not true for the objects inside the PVOB. We try to dissuade people from renaming streams, activities, or baselines. Don't rename anything because we're trying to maintain accurate historical integrity throughout the entire life cycle.
Yeah, but
the VOB itself, I could take that process to rename a VOB.
Right. That's not what makes it unique in the registry. The UUID is what makes it unique in the registry in the OID.
Okay.
It's not the actual tag.
Why not rename streams?
The branch type can't be renamed.
And it's also not just necessarily that. It's also because the branch is pivotal to the config spec, right? Because the config spec is based off of the underlying rules of looking at labels and branches. Renaming the stream can clearly confuse things because it doesn't necessarily mean that the config spec is going to be updated to look at that new name. It's going to still look at that old branch name. And certainly if you rename
baselines
with the labels, and you know, next thing you know, you can get that call where, hey, I'm looking at the wrong release here, or you know, my config spec's not loading the correct data, and it goes down the line of traceability. I hate to say it, but yeah, ultimately you want to eliminate confusion in the matter of when you create the metadata. It should be for that, once again, purpose. You know, renaming it means you are ultimately changing its purpose of what it should now be. At that point, we do want to push for, okay, maybe we should have a new stream or a new representation for that change.
Well, see, here's where I would say that you need to do in UCM what you guys did many years ago in ClearCase, say, disconnect your tracking of the metadata and the unique identifiers, and you need to do that safely. from the user presentation.
Because people make mistakes. They want to rename components. They want to rename streams. They want to change rename baselines.
I think you're kind of preaching to the choir with this because we're support. And the only answer that we can give you on this is work is still continuing on this. We have a new schema that'll be coming up, and so I don't know how much we'll get in on the new schema, but we're well aware of that.
Yeah, the flexibility is a big portion of that. You know, being more flexible with the metadata itself, a little bit of a looser hold.
Yeah, but I'm still not sure I would. You know, I would.
Yeah.
I don't like giving carte blanche to somebody to come in and rename something that needs to maintain historical integrity. So renaming of anything is, and especially in UCM, is you're asking for a little bit of trouble. You might as well just keep the same name. If you need to reuse that namespace, use a .1 extension. But the names are part of the history in UCM. So
will that new schema be in 8, or will that be like a 7.2?
No, it'll be in 8.
Okay.
Hi, folks. This is Jay Morrissey. We've about hit our time. I'm sorry. I know it went really fast. It was a lot of good conversation. Rick, Will, is there anything you want to wrap up with, or are you good?
We're good, and I just want to thank everybody for the interest. It's one of I won't speak for Will, but it's our favorite subject.
Absolutely, no, it's been fun, and I thank you guys for coming.
I would like to echo that thanks as well. I appreciate everybody showing up and expressing an interest and participating. Cheryl, Matt, Jim, much appreciated. Srinivas, much appreciated. Thanks everyone in the background here at support and at IBM. You folks out there on the phone, we had a cadre of people here online, back in Rick and Will up, although they did most of the work. I would like to solicit feedback on this session. Not here. You can, those of you who are in attendance, can send email to myself, Jay Morrissey, or Kelly Drazel. Our email addresses are out on the development forum posting, or you can just post the feedback there. Any thoughts you have, good, bad, or indifferent, are to make this better, are welcome. If there are additional questions that you've got on the subject matter that were not covered in this forum, please post them out on the development forum, and we'll get them answered, or we'll get them triaged into a PMR for you. Any questions before I wrap this up, folks?
Actually, I'll just, Jay, one more quick one. Cheryl, did you find the IAA module?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you find the IAA modules online?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I have one quick question. How do we make sure we're informed of the next one of these conference calls?
Excellent question. Watch the development. The best way to do it, sir, is this Jim?
No, this is Kurt Knudsen from Allstate.
Oh, Kurt, sorry. New voice. Kurt, the best way to do it is just watch the developer forum, which is where we post these events to ClearCase. That's where I'd have you look. If that's a problem, then email me directly, and I will find another solution one way or the other.
Jay, this is Kelly. We also have an open mic landing page on IBM.com. So if you go to Rational Open Mics, that should have a list of all the upcoming topics, regardless of what product they're covering.
So I could just search for Rational Open Mics?
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks, Kelly.
Put that link on the forum as well.
Actually, it is already out there. It's in every post that we make for an open mic.
Oh,
it's embedded.
Great. Oh, there I see it.
Very good, folks.
All
well, thank you again.
Thanks.
And have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.